Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina in studio tonight with Bobby Jean Bell and her wonderful husband Jim over there, swiveling in a chair with headphones on, sitting in front of a microphone. Woo woo!
That must mean we have a calling in guest.
We have a call in guest tonight, but we're not saying who it is yet. You know what? I was so excited tonight because I got an email from Netflix that Longmire was available for streaming now.
That's so great. Yeah, and we knew it was coming back on.
And I watched the first two episodes.
You did?
I did. I couldn't restrain myself.
Don't tell. You know, we need to see if we could get him on as a guest.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. We ought to put the bookie on that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
If you're listening, bookie, you got a new job. Bobby, how was the show this morning?
Oh, it was really terrific. Good. We had a Canadian poet wordsmith, Doris Daly. So we celebrated the written and spoken word with Doris. And then our second guest was really interesting gentleman, the founder of what's called Cowboy Dressage, Eitan Beth Halakami. And that was really, really interesting.
How did you just do that?
I just didn't know anything about Cowboy Dressage. And we always do our homework. And I had watched amazing, gorgeous videos of cowboy dressage off the cowboydressage.com website for those of our listeners who maybe are also interested in all things horse and horse lifestyle related. Go check out cowboydressage.com.
I'll do that. And while we're waiting to hear about our guest this evening, this is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley and Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, California. And we have another, advertiser. Yeah. Oh, nom, 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 nom. That's Target Freight. We have them up a little bit, about 15 minutes. And with that being said, Bobby.
Yes, we are very excited, as we always are here on the Writer's Block, as we celebrate those who write. And tonight our guest is calling in from Oklahoma. He is author John T. Biggs. John Biggs is an award-winning Oklahoma writer. He has numerous published short stories, and his first novel, Owl Dreams, was released in 2013, followed by Popsicle Sticks in 2014. His latest work, Sacred Alarm Clock, is an engaging apocalyptic short story collection, I believe, released this very day. Wow. If you enjoy a terrific story well told, this is the book for you. In his first novel, John Biggs already displays the sure hand and literary style of a seasoned writer. Fascinating, eccentric characters, generous dose of fantasy and magic, a genuine humor make his first book an unforgettable read. This is a quote from William Bernhardt, a New York Times bestselling author. Please welcome John T. Biggs.
Welcome, John.
Well, this sounds like the studio audience is just pretty full there.
It is. It is. It's like we have three tiers of seating here, and all three of them are filled.
Oh, well.
We have Bobby's husband, Jim, sitting in for you. He's kind of like your body sitting here, so we can talk directly to him.
Well, he's probably younger and better looking.
Well, no.
Check Facebook later for pictures.
Yeah. They'll be up. They'll be up about the time you go to bed.
Well, welcome, John. It's a pleasure to have you with us tonight.
Well, the pleasure is all mine.
Well, I sure hope so you think that way when you leave.
Yeah, I do too.
You will.
And I've told about 900 of my best friends that I'm going to be on this this program, so I'm hoping things go pretty well as well. So.
Well, then let's give him an opportunity to call in tonight, because if you want to call in and talk to John, even though you may know him and you're one of his 900 friends, the number to call here is 818-602-4929. That's 818 602-492-4929.
We want to hear from you.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Okay, I get the first question because I got to know. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. These are gentle, so not to worry. In your first book, Owl Dreams, which I did read, I ask every writer this because we get a lot of writers that write really stuff. What kind of drugs did you take?
Well, haven't taken any for a long time.
I got to tell you, the mysticism in this book is just phenomenal.
Well, you might not think so, but there's a lot of mysticism in Oklahoma. This is sort of a cultures in collision sort of place with a lot of Native American tribes, and at least traditionally, drugs have played an important part in the culture.
Oh, sure. Peyote and yada yada. Mushrooms.
Dotura, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I got some magic mushrooms in Owl Dreams, as a matter of fact.
Well, speaking of Oklahoma, because we know that you do write about all things Oklahoma, and that's home right now. You have a really interesting background, though, and I think that a lot of your background is reflected in what you write. Can you tell us a little bit, tell just a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got, what's your story?
Well, I really didn't start writing seriously until just around 2000, around the turn of the century. I was a dentist for quite some time, U.S. Public Health Service dentist, and came to Oklahoma looking for a job. I was stationed up in Maine, and I was up there for 3 years. This is a long time ago. And I was looking for any place to go besides Maine at that point, because I would have gone to the seventh circle of hell. And I imagined that Oklahoma would fall right in at least to the sixth circle of hell. The only thing I knew about it was what I'd learned from John Steinbeck. Mm-hmm. And when I got here, I found it was completely different than what I'd expected. Started meeting as a dentist. I had a lot of interaction through public health with the tribes, and the one of the first experiences I had a guy who could, we had posters up on the ceiling for people to look at and pretend that they enjoyed what I was doing to them. And this guy looked at the posters and he said, "You don't have any owls up there, do you?" And I said, "No, why do you ask?" And he said, "Well, he said, you got any Native Americans in here, and if they see an owl on a poster on your ceiling, they're going to get up and leave." And that's probably not actually true, but there would be some people who would. And it really got me curious, and I started talking to just about everybody who came in, all the Native Americans, and I found that they're very talkative. They don't mind sharing their culture with you at all, at least the Native Americans in Oklahoma. We have an interesting group of people here. It sounds definitely politically incorrect, but they call themselves and have been called the Five Civilized Tribes. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like a racial slur, but that's that five group five those five tribes were the first ones relocated out of their own land and shipped to Indian Territory. And you probably chalk that up to the invention of the cotton gin, because they lived in the on the East Coast, mm-hmm. Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, and Alabama, and that land became extremely valuable, and so they were shipped up here. And it's just a fascinating group of people.
Now, a lot of you use owl feathers also in popsicle sticks. The owl feather seems to have some significance in that book as well. And I'm interested why you chose to spell sticks, S-T-Y-X.
Well, that book is sort of a knockoff of Faust. We have a Choctaw holy man who was on death row, and he we have the protagonist is a combination minister and psychologist whose job it is to walk people the last mile down to be executed. And he has that, you can see how that would cause you to have a crisis in faith along the way. And that's exactly what happens to him, and he sort of lost confidence in all things supernatural until he meets this holy man, and he gradually gets drawn into to the holy man's mysticism, and ultimately, and it, of course, that speeds up a little bit when he turns out the holy man has a beautiful daughter who seems to be interested in him.
Yes, he does, and yes, she is.
Yeah, there's an Easter egg buried in there, which you'll never find in the book anywhere. But I when I pick names for characters, the Choctaw names and Cherokee names for that matter, I go off something called the Dawes Rolls. When Oklahoma was made a state, all the reservation lands were turned over. And given to individuals, and the tribal lands were divided up, and there was quite a fight over it at the time. It's back in 1906, and people were given head rights, but in order to get those head rights, they had to go onto a roll. And so I picked names off the Dawes rolls, and so they're authentic. But Holaby Minko, who's my antagonist, the holy man in here. His name, if you translate it from Choctaw, means the chief of liars.
Okay.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. All of the Choctaw, and of course, anybody happens to be listening to this show would be able to figure that out.
And we don't want to do any spoiler alerts, but I have to say, as I read that book and I got to the end, I kept reading the last page like over and over, like what? Wait a minute, what?
Yeah, she did. She actually sat in the lobby and went through it out loud. And she still was scratching her head going, huh?
Well, that's I did find that to be a really fascinating read, and the characters, not people that I necessarily would want to call my friends. We've got some really gnarly characters in that book, but a fascinating read. Now, you have written a lot of short stories. You're one of the first authors, I think, we've had on.
I know, Courtney. I think someone else did an anthology.
Yeah, we've had some short story writers. I'm interested, tell us a little bit about Boy Witch.
Well, Boy Witch was, I started writing, the first thing I tried to write when I started writing, I think this is a mistake that a lot of writers make, I decided to write the great American novel. And I still haven't gotten there, but that's a really big effort to start off with. And I shopped it around, and nobody wanted to look at it. And I talked to an agent editor, and he said, you need to write short stories and perfect your skill. And so I just started doing that. And I wrote about just one after another, about 80 of them. And I didn't know what to do with them. I didn't know how to find markets. At the time, it was much more difficult. Maybe it wasn't. I just didn't know how to do it. But Boy Witch, I wrote actually on a cruise. And it's about, as most of my characters are, a fish-out-of-water sort of character. It's a half-breed Laguna Cherokee boy on a Navajo Indian reservation. And he doesn't fit in anywhere, and everybody thinks he's a witch, even though he's not. And he learns to be alone and such. But that particular story, I liked it. I wrote several. That's one of the things that I like to do is pick a character and write stories about them through different parts of their lives. And Boy Witch, I sent to I read about a Western anthology that was looking for stories about that length. And there's a guy from Fayetteville, Arkansas, Dusty Richards, was doing this anthology, and I sent it to him. And about the same time, I sent it off to Writer's Digest and entered it in the annual competition. It's a huge competition, about 11, 12,000 applicants, stories get passed through that. It's a big prize, about $3,000. They fly you to New York. And so anyways, but I didn't really expect to win that because 11,000 people, I mean, something strange has to happen if you're going to, if you win something like that. So I, and they do allow you to send in, to do simultaneous submissions. But what they don't say until later is that if you happen to be published, they won't allow you to win the contest. It has to be unpublished. And I ask if you have published it or even submitted it for publication. And I was working on somebody's doing a root canal, as a matter of fact, when I got this call at this thing from my wife that this story had won the 80th annual Writer's Digest competition. And I, you know, immediately I thought, my gosh, she wasn't sure which story it was. I, you know, looked it up, and I realized I'd submitted this to Dusty as well. And Dusty hadn't exactly taken it, but he's a great writer. He writes tremendously good dialogue, but he's not the best communicator always. And he would say things like, "Yeah, I like this story. I'm real interested in it." And I said, well, is that going to, what's that mean? You know, and he said, well, I'm going to send it to Lou and see what she thinks. Well, I didn't know who the hell Lou was. But it turned out that Dusty was getting ready to publish this story, and it was within a matter of days, it was going to come out in an anthology, which would make me not eligible to win the Writer's Digest Grand Prize. But he was kind enough to pull that. And fortunately, he said, if you got another story about the same length, and I had another story about the same character, which was the title of that one was Try to Kill You Days. Mm-hmm. And it was about the same length. It was just at a slightly different point in his life, a slightly earlier point in his life. And so I wound up, you know, he was good enough to take that one and pull the other one. And that was really the first two stories, well, not exactly, but it was the first two stories I had published in anything of, which had any kind of circulation.
Hey, John, we need to break real quick for our appetizers, and sure, we'll be back to you in just a second.
All right.
And you're on the air with John T. Biggs.
Hey, Jim Christina here for Target Freight Management, the 3PL solution to all your shipping needs. Are you tired of your freight being reclassed? Tired of calling several freight companies for the best rate for your shipments? Then, of course, they reclass you anyway, and there go your rates. And Target Freight Management has a solution for you. Their customized transportation management system protects all of their clients from situations just like yours. If you're currently shipping a density-based product, you need to call Target Freight today. Target Freight is currently saving their clients between 15 and 20% off their freight costs, and that's a huge savings to anyone. They will even do a free cost analysis of your current freight program to see if you are a good fit for their program, and not everyone is. The kicker is, Target Freight is only paid strictly on the contingency they can save you money on your LTO costs. Call Target Freight Management today and just see what they can do for your company. Target Freight Management, 888-653-1323, or catch them on the web at www.targetfmi.com. That's 888-653-1323, Target Freight Management.
And we are back. And if you're just now joining us, we're on the air with John T. Biggs, writer of a couple books that we're holding in the studio. Actually, four books. I have your bio page, and then the one I stole from your website, which is 12 pages. I don't see how anybody writes 12 pages.
Yeah, the world's longest. I'm getting older, you know.
But you know, actually, if you want to talk to John, because so far he's been great, 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. There's so many things in your bio that are interesting, John, but I found specifically the part where your first date with your wife was in a graveyard.
That's right. Yeah, that was I'd always, I've always been a little bit, I've been shy, and I think a lot of writers are. We're introverted as a general rule. I wasn't a writer back then, but I saw my wife, and I liked what I saw, and I thought she was 1,000 times too good for me, and so I didn't ask her out. And then, but I, you know, tried to express my interest somewhat. And then I got a call from someone I thought was her, and actually was her sister, asking me if I'd go with her to a family picnic. And I jumped at it, you know, and they never said a word to me. I got into this car, and we started driving out to this rural area in southern Illinois, which is where we lived at that time. And pulled into a drive, and there was her dad and her mother, and they were sitting around on tombstones in front of this camp, barbecuing hot dogs and hamburgers and such. And I thought, man, I made it. I've got a freak here. They were quite normal people. I was a little bit shocked that she hadn't said a word. You know, now you're going to see some strange things when you pull up here, and don't think of this. We got this lot exceptionally at an exceptionally reasonable price. You'll understand.
Well, apparently,
why.
Nobody was there to argue with you.
That's right. I'm a cemetery buff. I mean, that's a strange thing.
Oh, they're cool.
Everywhere I travel a lot, but everywhere I go, I visit cemeteries.
So, oh, that's kind of a great hobby to
have. I love cemetery art. And we've got in southeastern Oklahoma, there's a cemetery that is, it's an odd, you might not think of Oklahoma this way, but there used to be a stopover for the circus. And southeastern Oklahoma, we have a bunch of towns named Ringling and Hugo. They have a lot of circus names, and they spent the winter there. Like, there's a place in Florida, Gibson Town, I think, that did sort of the same thing. And there's a cemetery there which is devoted to circus people, and, you know, they have monuments that look like carousels and elephants, and it's kind of a strange place.
Where did the... back onto writing a little bit. Where did the title and the story for Owl Dreams come from?
Well, I met. I was working on the story. I went to one of the first writers conferences. I went to was a thing called Red Dirt Book Festival, and there was a speaker there, a storyteller named Tim Tingle.
Oh, no way. You're lying now, aren't you?
No, that's his name. I mean, we've got some interesting names. I mean, that's a Choctaw name, Tingle. And I use that name a lot in stories. It's on one of the bone houses, I think, in Owl Dreams. But Tim Tingle collects Native American stories, and he's a fabulous writer, by the way. He collects Native American stories from old people who just remember them from the oral history, and they change. If you collected a story from one area, you might collect the same story from another area, it'd be completely different. And so Tim had found a native Choctaw speaker, I understand, in Mississippi. And almost all the Choctaw were removed to Oklahoma, but there were some that remained. And there aren't very many native speakers at all. So he went basically through the woods and found this lady and knocked on the door, and no one came to the door for a long time, which I guess isn't too unusual. And he knocked again and again. Finally, a very young woman came to the door, and she knew who he was and knew what he was there for. And she said, Grandma doesn't want to talk to you today, but if you come back tomorrow, she will, as long as she doesn't have owl dreams. And I thought, that is about the coolest thing I've ever heard. And so I definitely worked the concept of owl dreams into the story. If she had owl dreams, it would mean it would be a very bad sign.
Ah, okay.
I want to talk a little bit about the brand new collection, Sacred Clock, Sacred Alarm, Sacred Alarm Clock. Yeah. Now, you do refer to this as a short story collection, but really, as I read it, and I have just one chapter to go, if you can believe that, I couldn't get it finished before talking to you tonight, so I have one last chapter to do before I go to bed tonight. But to me, it's really, really like a novel, because you have reappearing, you know, characters are throughout the book.
I tried to link those stories so closely that it basically was a novel. But there are a couple of characters, like the very first characters in that collection, and that there were some more stories in that collection that don't appear but the very first character in that collection, a guy, Wiley E. Chatto, he sort of disappears, and you wouldn't do that in a novel. You just have your main characters have a start him off in the first chapter and just lose him.
Right. Well, he kind of comes back. He comes and goes a little bit, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's in there about three times, and the story actually would have started with the first two stories originally when I wrote it were Chris and Mona, who were a mm-hmm. lesbian couple who started off in Choctaw territory down in the southeast and then moved. And they're featured throughout the collection. But there was it's a post-apocalyptic thing, and that was pre-apocalyptic, and so the editor at Ogma wasn't too keen on putting that in there. If you started reading those stories from the very beginning, it would seem like if you're getting in there expecting it to be an apocalyptic story, it didn't seem like it was going to go there. It would take a long time to get there.
Well, you know, it's interesting, John, because when I started to read it, I didn't really know anything about it. I didn't know really that it was a collection about the apocalypse. But as I was reading it, of course, you start to talk about, you know, the power grid not being real strong and lights being dim and soldiers in the street and such. And I thought, oh, my goodness, what is going on in this world that he's created, and are we way in the future? And I thought, no, we've got regular cars and motorcycles. I'm not seeing any super, you know, new technologies and things. I thought it was really fascinating how you begin to introduce this concept that we are heading for the end. Tell us about the new flu.
Well, the new flu is sort of a mysterious thing. The power grid wasn't bad enough. The people start getting sick, and instead of the new flu starts off like ordinary influenza, but instead of being an upper GI problem and something that makes your bones ache, it goes after the religious centers in your brain. The temporal lobes, and there's a neurological area up there called the God Center, which I don't really deal with in that. But it causes people to have religious delusions. They become, as I think I refer to it, as Jonestown crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And they can hear God speak, and he's telling them to do very bad things. And for some reason, Native Americans don't seem to be affected. Of course, not everybody is affected either, and neither do homosexuals. So essentially, you've got people in the state that were on the fringes that suddenly they're the only sane people left in the state, or really in the United States. Well, it would be sweeping the whole world really at one point. But the reason that the end of the world would look very different in Oklahoma than it would in California. And the tribes, to them, I read a book once called Almanac of the Dead by Leslie Marmon Silko. And, you know, when things go totally haywire, to the Native Americans, they're just getting back to normal. You know, all of a sudden, all of this society that really hasn't supported them all along is gone, and they're sort of getting things back the way it was when when they first got started, when they were basically in charge of the country.
Right. You say that early on when one of the gals, I can't recall now, is like talking to her son, and she says, here, I just found it on page 25. Mom says the white man's world is falling apart, and pretty soon America will belong to us again. She's not talking ghost dances. I just lost this, or bulletproof shirts like the Indians at Wounded Knee were Choctaw, after all, one of the civilized tribe. It's the riots, she says, the power failures, the strikes, the murders. I think this is where I was like, oh, strikes, power fail, oh, what's going on? And that's basically what she's saying is that Native Americans have not had to rely, you know, on the technology and such that the white man has had for so long. And they'll know how, they don't rely on gasoline, and they don't rely, you know, as we lose these things, they'll still survive.
That's right. As white people get weaker, they get stronger.
And right.
And as one of the things that you would notice here, the civilized tribes, the Indians are extraordinarily generous. They would take much better care of us than we took care of them, unfortunately.
Well, they were trying to expand.
I'm sorry, Eddie, I didn't.
I said they weren't trying to expand.
No, they weren't. They were just
Happy where they were.
Just being there, that's right.
Now, I noticed that you write quite a bit, at least in this book, in sort of the first person. Is it challenging to write as a writer in the first person, and why did you choose to write that way?
You know, it's challenging. In novels, it's very challenging to write a novel in the first person. It's in a short story, a short piece. It makes it more urgent.
There is an urgency.
It's easier, and it may be a little easier to identify with the protagonist. Mm-hmm. But there's a tendency when you write in the first person to get sort of preachy, I think. And you really have to watch out for that. I understand. I may have this wrong. I'm not a master of fine arts person. But I think first person narratives started as confession stories.
That's one way of looking at it.
That's interesting.
And, you know, people were being hanged in England, and there would be people passing out these narratives that would explain, I did this, and I did this, and I had this happen to me, and this is how I came to this no good end. And it's, I guess they caught on, and then they moved on to more elaborate confession stories. So there's a tendency to sort of do that. Mm-hmm. It is difficult. I think the easiest way to write is third person limited.
Yes, I totally agree with you. We had another author on here, Ed Erdelak, and his first book was a book called Buff Tea. It was a Western. It was about buffalo hunters or buffalo shooters, because they didn't hunt him, he says. He wrote that entire book, and that book is like 380 pages in first person. I have no idea how he did that, how he kept his sanity while he did it.
Well, it's extremely hard to do, and some of the things I write are also, and you'll see that, it's another reason that book is, Sacred Alarm Clock, is a collection of short stories rather than novels. Some of the things are first person, some are third person, some are present tense,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And some are past tense. I present tense also gives you an urgency. You know, feeling mm-hmm. that something is happening now.
Right.
And this, with Native American oriented things, and this is from a white man's point of view, of course, Native Americans traditionally live in the present. And it's so writing in past tense, third person limited, kind of pulls you away from that, maybe a little bit. So if your protagonist is Native American, I think it fits to be first person present tense, actually, pretty well.
Okay. We need to take another break, and we'll be back with you shortly. Just hang on the line, would you, John?
Sure.
Okay.
Hey, Jim Christina here for TFM Truckload, a division of Target Freight Management. TFM Truckload is here to help you with all of your truckload and railroad shipping needs. If you want a reputable company who is going to work hard to find you the best rates while maintaining the best service, then TFM Truckload is who you need to call. When TFM Truckload books a truck for your company, it shows up 100% of the time. So if you want a reliable truckload broker, then call TFM Truckload today. That's TFM Truckload toll-free at 844-653-7789. Or if you're a web guy like me, go to www.targetfmi.com. So give them a call at 844-653-7789 or catch them on the web.
And we are back. And if you're just now joining us, why did you wait so long? We are on the line with John T. Biggs, writer of a couple of really good novels we happen to have here in the studio with us. And we've been discussing all kinds of stuff with John. But now I'd like to ask a question about your writing style, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure.
I noticed, I didn't read the other one. What's it called, Bobby?
Popsicle Sticks.
Popsicle Sticks. But I did read Owl Dreams. And I noticed that, like a lot of other authors now, you're going to shorter chapters. And you get
right.
you're putting in like 36 to 40 chapters into a book, whereas I guess a traditional book would be like 20, 25 chapters. Do you find that it's easier to flow the story with shorter chapters?
I think that you're seeing a lot of people go that route now. There was people are you know, look at Twitter. You put everything 140 characters or less. I think there's a tendency for people to maybe have shorter attention span. They're not going to identify, or they're not going to read cozy literature if it doesn't sort of get to the point and then switch off. I think there's a tendency to lose the reader. That was one of the guys here that wrote a blurb for me, Bill Bernhardt. He teaches creative writing courses, and he's fabulous at it. And one that was one of his things that he tries to get people who follow his theories to do is to keep sentences short, to keep paragraphs short, put a lot of white on the page, I guess, and keep chapters short and flowing and keep the attention jumping back and forth.
Well, I noticed probably over 10 years ago when I started reading James Patterson, that was his style. His style was like maybe one or two page chapters, and then they moved on to the next one. And I almost want to say, and this probably isn't true, and I probably don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but I almost want to say that he was the one that kind of spearheaded this whole short chapter deal.
I think you're probably right. Of course, he went one step further and doesn't even bother to write them himself.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say, and he doesn't write half his stuff by himself anymore. So,
And I also notice you write wonderful similes. You use similes a lot.
Yeah, you know, you could say I maybe use similes too much sometimes. I've been told.
Anyway. Had you been told? But they're wonderful, and to me, they really bring in, it does help me feel like I am right there. I am smelling, I'm seeing, I'm feeling what your words are describing. And it took me a while before I think I realized. I was like, that's another simile.
Yeah, one of the, I'll do a first draft and then go back and see just how many of those doggone things I can throw in there. And I do the same thing with senses, and less in Owl Dreams, more probably in the three books you've got down there in Sacred Alarm Clock. I will actually go through there and say, okay, I'll analyze this and see how many senses I can put in each paragraph. I mean, it what kind of a sensory experience I can describe, and it's useful. Especially if you the Sacred Alarm Clock was written over a period of about 4 years, and it wasn't written in order. It was written totally out of order. That's one of, so you'll see some evolution in style in there. You may not be able to tell what came first, or, you know, see, either he's getting better or he's losing it, you know, somewhere along the line. But that's kind of what I do. I'll do something and put it aside for a while and go write something else and then come back. And I'm definitely a seat-of-the-pants writer. I don't work with an elaborate outline.
We're finding that more and more to be the case. Almost everybody we talk to now says the same thing, that they don't use outlines.
Do you write every day? Do you have a type of discipline about how you write? Tell us a little bit about that.
Try to do 3 to 6 hours every day, and some of that's writing, and a lot of it's rewriting. And you know, people tell you, like one of the things Bernhard says to do that I don't, is get stuff down on paper and then fix it later. But I just can't. I tend to go back and rewrite things as I go, and I don't know, probably shouldn't do it. It would be much more efficient to do it the way he says. He recommends doing an firm outline as well. I use synopsis. I'll just write just a short thing about what's going to happen, usually just in this chapter, and I've got a general idea of what's going to happen, in general. And then sometimes by the time I'm just a little bit in there, I'll realize, well, that just doesn't work, you know. And it'll come out completely different than when I start. Al Dreams, the protagonist was
Sarah Bible.
Yeah, but originally it was going to be Michael, the schizophrenic guy who talks to the wind.
Oh.
But I couldn't, you know, that was the first novel. Well, it wasn't the first novel I wrote, but it was. I could not maintain a crazy person persona throughout a book as the main character. And I like to do that sort of thing. I like my narrators. I like them to be naive narrators or even unreliable narrators. But that he was a little too unreliable, and I just couldn't do it. And so I wound up switching. And I like that book. It's funny. It was a humorous book.
Yeah, it actually is.
But it's got some defects that you know. If I were doing it again, I wouldn't do it that way.
Well, you know, we always look back and say, God, I wish I had another chance.
That's right. It's too late now.
Now, you belong to several writing groups in and around Oklahoma and Tulsa. Do you find joining group, if you were to give some advice to writers, you know, trying to get started today, would you recommend?
You have to join groups. Mm-hmm. You have to join groups. You have to get in critique groups. You have to get in, and it doesn't matter if you get into critique groups of people who write different sorts of things than you write, or even things you wouldn't even ordinarily read. You learn a lot from it, and it's amazing how the kind of feedback that you get from people who you wouldn't think could give you that kind of feedback, mm-hmm. but they do. It's anytime I have somebody read something, anything they tell me, I never ignore it. I might not successfully respond to it, but I never just say, "Well, they don't know what they're talking about." And that's a big mistake I think people make. And contacts, getting something published. Of course, you can publish it yourself these days, and a lot of people do that. And there are some very good self-published literature out there, but there's also a lot of total trash. And I think some people go that route. They have their reasons. They're good promoters. They're good marketers. And other people do it because they won't listen to anybody when they tell them how to fix their writing.
Exactly. Yep.
Hey, I have a question for you. And this is actually one we ask everybody who's on the show. The show is called The Writer's Block. Have you ever had writer's block?
Yes, but not. You know, usually what I think of as classical writer's block is where you just can't think of anything to write.
Right.
But that doesn't happen to me particularly. But what happens to me is I get diverted. I start some writing something, and I divert off and write something else. And that's kind of a different kind of writer's block, maybe, but it's, I think it's pretty common. And you get an idea. Popsicle sticks. I actually was in a a 6-month-long seminar with where I was working over this next book that's coming out very shortly, the Cherokee Ice, another civilized tribe, and deals with drugs. Timothy Leary meets Black Elk, I guess. I was actually working on that, and I started thinking we had some people that were executed in Oklahoma, and some things that didn't go quite right. And I got sort of interested in that. I thought, boy, if you were a chaplain in a state penitentiary and you're putting people to death, how much different is that than, say, walking a virgin to the edge of a volcano and sacrificing her to the gods? I mean, you're basically, you know, you're doing the same thing. You're getting this person right with, so I really just got fascinated with that and just abandoned Cherokee Ice, which was had a different title at the time, and just wrote this other book. And I thought it was short, but it went fast. I mean, it was an urgent form of writing. I just couldn't get it down on paper fast enough. It's short though. It's a very short book.
Huh. Well, look, the time we have left, why don't you give everybody your information, your email address, your Twitter account, your Facebook, blah, 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 blah.
Okay, well, I'm at Big Spirit, B-I-G-G-S, Spirit, is my Twitter account. My Facebook account, it's John Biggs, Oklahoma Writer on Facebook, I guess. I've got a website blog, which is also, you know, John Biggs, Oklahoma Writer. I am just not very good at keeping up with that, quite frankly.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to have to get back with that, but it's something that I've let languish. And was there something else?
This is your story.
Well,
okay.
And John, we would really appreciate it. I was on your Facebook page today, and you had some really interesting things that you were posting. And we would encourage all of our Writer's Block authors, we'd love you to also be considering our Facebook page as a place that you can post or share.
That's great.
Yeah.
I liked your page, and I certainly will go there and post things if it's okay.
Absolutely. And if you've got, you know, new things coming out, you're going to be on the air somewhere, please, we would really like that to become a social spot for especially for all of those that have been with us and those that will be with us coming, to make that page really lively and interesting. You know, just please think of it when you're posting. Put some material there as well.
Oh, that's a great opportunity.
It is. We think so.
Yeah, well, it is. That's something that when I started writing, I had no idea. I thought you just wrote a book and that was it, you know, but it's obviously not.
Well, it's got, you know, shameless self-promotion is the name of the game here.
That's the name of the game,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, look, we've enjoyed having you on the show. And
well,
loved your books.
Well, I certainly enjoyed it.
Well, good. We're glad you liked it. And come back and see us if you want to. Just get a hold of the bookie and she'll fix it up for you. But it's going to be next year.
You can always call and just say, hey, I just wanted to give you an update. Cherokee Ice is out.
That's
or
right.
Whatever, you know. Love to hear from you.
Yep. And the numbers are right on our
great
Facebook page. So feel free to call.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And thanks again for coming on, John. I guess he hung up. Oh, well.
Well, that was fun. Oklahoma, it's like a couple hours. They're a couple hours ahead of us, aren't they?
Yeah, two.
Yeah.
So, I have some exciting news.
You do?
I do. And we have time to talk about it tonight.
Okay.
My wife, Jerry Christina, just got finished with her very first children's book.
Woohoo!
Been 30 years in the making. Black Dog Publishing did the whole thing for her. It's called The Pumpkin and the oh God, forgive me, the Pumpkin and the Scarecrow.
Oh.
And it's just a sweet, nice little book.
Perfect time of year for a book
truly,
to come out
is.
Called The Pumpkin and the Scarecrow.
It is. And next week, this is going to be a party in here. Next week, we have on the writer's block in person, in probably the chair that Jim's sitting in right now, Mr. Peter Sciarrico. For those of you who don't know who Peter is, he was Texas Jack in the movie Tombstone. He owns a production company, Caravans West. He's been in movies, TV.
Talking Head and all kinds of History Channel stuff. Wild West Tech. And
Pete's an amazing guy. And I've known him for a number of years.
And as he's a
Bobby.
Writer.
And he's a writer. And he did Tombstone Guns and Gear, which was a huge success. Ran out months, I think, after publication. So he'll be with us next week. And the following week, we have Patrick Shanahan. And that's the night that Russ will be here with me.
Right.
And I have nothing else to say.
I think that's a wrap.
I think it is, too. And you've been listening to The Writer's Block. I'm Jim Christina here with Bobby Bell. And we'll see you next Thursday here at 8 o'clock on LA Talk Radio.